Welcome to Supercharge, the Change and Comms podcast. In this episode, we have a special guest, Aizan, who is a strategist and change management expert with over 19 years of experience. She has successfully overseen large-scale projects in both government and corporate sectors and currently serves as a board member at the Astana Financial Services Authority and Bank of Asia. Aizan is also a thought leader, empowering women through her YouTube channel, Her Way in Central Asia. She's a certified change management professional, so join us as we dive into her inspiring journey. Right, but Pete, how is things in Barcelona?
Very good. They've started putting the giant Easter eggs in the shops here, so I'm looking forward to Easter. That'll give a clue to when we're recording this, I think. I'm really happy to say we've got Aizan with us here today, and we're really looking forward to finding out all about you, where you're from, what kind of experience you've got, the good and bad things that you've found through change management. So can you tell us a bit about yourself, please?
Well, thank you, Pete, Chris, for inviting me. It's a quite new form of interaction through podcast for me. So looking forward to gain a new experience and share my thoughts, ideas about the change discipline development in Central Asia. As you mentioned, my career primarily focuses at the board level. I serve four boards. And my main competence that I contribute to the board are human resource development, improvement of business process, internal audit, and of course, change management that I did it from my previous position. As you already mentioned, I joined SCMP board last year, and this is something that aligns with my passion for change management. I would call it as a dream role for me. I'm also a woman leadership mentor. I love support women in every way, at every stages of their career, assisting them in their growth professionally and personally. And my mother, two kids. I have daughter and son. So my daughter, she is 16 now and standing in front of, I would say, key decision in her life. She's choosing the major for at the university. And I am the mother, support her in every possible way. This shortly by myself, and how did I come to change management? You know, recently when I listened to your podcast with Doug, I realized, like many others, change managers, I entered the change management specialization from completely different field. My university major from Birmingham University in finance and accounting, even though this subject whenever my true passion, and I thought that I will never stick to this specialization for the rest of my life. I hope no one hear me, especially my bosses right now. Over the years, I've worked on various projects in government and corporate setting where I utilize my experience in change management profession and further develop my knowledge in this area. So the project were mostly transformational, and why they are transformational is just because I've implemented quite a new approaches and processes from the scratch that had not been used before. Gradually, I transitioned my specialization from finance to HR field, and I've never regretted this decision because I love to interact with other people. And through my work on transformational project, I've witnessed the firsthand of how change is driven by the human element. So my understanding that change management is not only the competence that every HR person, HR director should possess, it's actually the whole profession, discipline, occurred to me in 2019 during my training courses in the Institute of Independent Directors. And it became evident to me that change management is a leadership competency that every independent board director should possess in order to carry out their responsibility effectively. So this is how I entered the change management profession. And after these courses, I made my firm decision that I would like to get a certification in change management. I would like to join SMP community. And, you know, I would like to share with you my personal thought that it was quite a revealing for me that values outlined in ICMP Code of Ethics are actually my personal values that I manifest to people in throughout my life, like honesty in communication, like I do what I say I will do. It's like I treat people equally. So furthermore, I would say that to apply this knowledge, the most effectively I could apply the knowledge of change management during the COVID time, the pandemic time. And I think the global pandemic highlighted the importance of effectively managing change and every company to navigate significant shift, especially in improvement their business processes. So thankful to this case, if I may say so, top management in our company and every other company finally realize how important it is to pay attention to human aspect of every change.
I think everybody we've spoken to in recording these series across Australia, India, Malaysia, now you, the US as well, definitely in the UK, everybody, I think, at some point has brought up the impact of COVID on change management. And I guess it's just one of those things that wherever you are in the world, it was something that was like extremely impactful to the way that any organization worked, and a really good proof that change management can be quite helpful.
I think it was a huge transformational project for every company in the world, the COVID case, for everybody. So agree with you for 100%.
Yeah, no, it's right. The COVID pandemic was a shifter, and I think it's changed the perspectives as well across organizational change, whereas I think pre-COVID we were looking at change management through the lenses of smaller projects and transformation activities, but because the effect that the pandemic had on organizations, I think for the first time that shift came where they started looking across the entire organization in terms of what change was happening and when. And I think it ties into your point, Izan, around, and I had to note this down because it was so insightful, is that change management is a discipline and a competency that every director should possess. Now, I think you're probably the first person I've heard say that, and I think it's absolutely bang on. Just through different challenges I've looked back on over my career and thinking, they don't necessarily see it as such an important foundation stone to the organization as such, you know, your traditional people or HR type mm-hmm. processes and policies. But if you think about what the key disciplines within change management are, we get slung with its comms and training, but actually an awful lot of it is around that people aspects. And, you know, ProSize 10 aspects of change actually do show that, don't they? I mean, if you look through the change impact assessment, it talks about roles and remuneration. But it's quite interesting to hear that. And I've just noted it down because I think it's something we should explore further, Pete, actually. But yeah, I agree. COVID was the biggest changer, but I think it's changed more in terms of creating a recognition of the discipline, but also that discipline needs to be looked at across an organization, not just through the lens of the individual transformations or projects.
A few weeks ago, you were in San Diego at ACMP conference, and I wondered if you could tell us a bit about it.
It was called Change San Diego.
So what were the main topics? What were some of the interesting things that came out of that for you?
Well, the first experience that will stay with me for a long time, normal human being, of course, it's a memory of beautiful ocean, a refreshing sea breeze, friendly locusts, delicious food in San Diego. So, and I believe that anyone who visits San Diego will have a similar memorable experience. Secondly, and I said that for the first time we've met with my colleagues from the board, and I think it's some kind of sign for me of growing interest of change management discipline in our region, in our country. And of course, it's personally was a really pleasure to see my colleagues. It gives me understanding, deep understanding of what motivates them, their values, and what is important to them. And it was different experience compared to just communicating over the Zoom. At the end of the conference, I had the opportunity to share my reflection on the session, and the session now was really amazing. Every session is a pleasure. There was a particularly one session that resonated with me. It calls Trauma-Informed Change. It emphasized how trauma survivors may re-experience past trauma when exposed to certain situations and or environments. And I actually kept asking myself why this session was so close to me. And I found the answers is probably because while working on change in any transformational project, I'm trying to find the key to each person through the awareness of his or her past experience. Therefore, for me, this session was once again some kind of confirmation that change management is a human-centric discipline. And I was also impressed with one of the sessions where we've been suggested to visualize the changes within the companies. Usually at the session, the speakers is talking and making the presentation. But for the first time, I've seen such kind of unique approach to visualizing the transformation. So I would say that change management professionals know how to work with the human emotions. And I can say that it's a lot of the diversity of tools have been suggested over these 2 days that you've never find like in one library. So all this diversity of tools that have been presented, as our president of SCMP says, Rich Bachelor, that all the tools provided by change management managers, professionals make other people happier in their lives. So this is what I found about San Diego conference.
Did they list, or did you take away any tools that you thought were either something new or something you hadn't seen before, or perhaps even something that you've now seen in a different light?
I think the exercise that we've proposed to do is the trauma experience change, quite interesting one, where there was, we've done it in a pair when this was suggested how the person behavior in the company perceived by the team and how, taking in consideration his or her past experience, he actually feel. It's quite interesting, I would say, exercise that can be applied and taken into consideration by every change management professional. So it's quite new for me to look from this angle at people's behavior through the change.
When you talked about the session around visualizing change, were there any things that you remember from that really stand out or you think would be useful for people?
First, it was interesting to see how you express the emotions and try to visualize them, actually. Not through the communication, but drawing the picture of how a person should behave. This is a completely different approach how to place your emotion on white paper rather than just talking. So I think sometimes you can use this approach rather than communicating.
I don't know if you listened to it, but the first episode that we've put up from this series was all about visualizing change. And I was just thinking from what you were saying that something that we spoke about in that episode was how if you use cartoons to represent people, you can show things that you can't necessarily do just by filming them. And I think probably showing emotions is quite a good way of doing that as well.
I saw something really interesting yesterday, actually, and it comes back to the visualization of change. And it was something I'd never thought about. And it does relate to this cross-cultural perspective we've had, Pete and Aizen, right? So we had a review, an overview of all the different types of AI that's being applied across, you know, organizations. And there was a designer in one of these talks, and they described, you know, that they were creating campaigns on putting across sometimes some, you know, very important messages. Where I'm working at the moment, it's all about weather. So it could have been about flood, or it could have been about snow, or it could have been about heat. And the work that they do is not just applicable to the UK, it's applicable to different countries across the world. And they said the one thing that AI has helped with by visualizing the change is that in the old days, we would just send out a bulletin and it would say, you know, southwesterly wind, you know, 60 knots, risk to life. And it's everyone would interpret that in a slightly different way. You'd get the gist, but you couldn't really say what that would mean for me where I am. And then what AI has helped them do is that when they would now try to make it slightly more human-centric, so when they were talking about snow and they were trying to suggest that people stay home, they were using pictures of people with pets by a fire as an example inside their house. So it was saying, you know, it's bad weather outside, it's better to stay indoors where you'll be safer. And it worked really well. The next layer on top of that was what AI was doing, was taking different native species of dogs or styles of homes and applying that picture. So for the US, they had slightly more fluffy brown white dog, slightly bigger. The UK had smaller dogs. The fires in the UK look slightly more gas-like, and the ones in America were very big, vibrant fireplaces with, you know, pictures all over the place, and the British one was slightly more lamps by a table. And AI was then suggesting that this would land better with the different audiences based on, you know, the culture. And I never thought of that. It never crossed my mind that actually I couldn't write that story because I could never help you see it. Because it's like when you read a book, if you read a book that you like, you would read it, Pete, and you could read it, Aizen, and we would picture the main character differently from what they're wearing to their, you know, their structure, their build and what have you. AI's changed that in terms of, you know, landing change of messaging by actually applying a slightly stereotypical view, perhaps, but a stereotypical cultural view as to where the message is going. And I thought that was really interesting. And I think that can be applied in change depending on the type of personas you'd have in an organization. I thought it was really quite interesting. I might have taken us down the path again, sorry.
Using AI much in your work, or is that a hot topic?
Not really. At the board level, we're not using AI because you need to express your own opinion and AI will not be helpful. But I agree that first, AI can have a like support function for a change management professional, but never will be substitute the change management professional, because only human can human and understand the emotions. So the board level, we are not using AI.
I found another interesting use for it, though, in terms of if you were writing a key message. This isn't my ideas. This is out there. I'm just kind of sharing something I found. Was that if you were writing a key message about a significant change, and it had been around the houses a bit, and you've had some different directors and heads of, and you can start to tell very quickly that that message has lost its kind of shape and structure a bit. But if you pump it into some of these AI things and just ask it a simple question or a prompt, like, what are the three key takeaways you have from this message? If it's not coming back with the ones that you started with, you can use that as an evidence to say back to those who have butchered your comms or intervention and say, actually, this is not really what we wanted to get to. And this has now been validated by someone or a thing, I should say, externally. And I found that a really interesting use for it. So you're right, Aizen. Jenny, in an earlier episode, did say to us, it's not our jobs that will be replaced by AI. It is the way that we do them that will change. And I think actually that is a value use case to say that if I write something, I can test it to say whether or not the AI is picking up the key sentiment or messages, because it does do sentiment as well, to say whether or not I've kind of got across the points I wanted to. So I think you're right. You can't replace us. We are, you know, intuitive and we understand emotion better than the AI does. But I think there is a tool in there that can actually ensure that we are probably reaching our intentions. Perhaps is probably the best way to put it.
Can we talk a bit about Central Asia then and your experiences or kind of reflections on what it's like to be a change expert in Central Asia? And if I was coming to work with you, what are the top things that you would tell me to look out for?
So I think better to start from time when we gained the independence. Kazakhstan, it was like more than 30 years ago. And changes began to play a significant role in our lives, I would say, as we started to be inevitable part of a global world. And those time changes were very fast and people were not spoiled by with information as it is now. I think that those times, the people been more adaptable to changes. And now, due to the fact that all exposed to different type of information, global trends like social media, social network, artificial intelligence changes, people have access to large amount of information and they subject any changes to careful screening and made their own decision. So now everybody understand the importance of individuals who can provide a comprehensive understanding of change. The second thing that I observing is that there are now growing demand in our countries for a position with the title of change management lead, change management agent, because previously there was understanding that it's a competency and it should be within the HR position, as I mentioned before. And right now, top managers believe that change management should be as a individual position within the organization, and there should be dedicated individual who will be responsible for leading change within the companies. Certainly, it happened not only in companies, corporate companies, but it happened the importance of change manager lead existence at the government level here. Like 2 years ago, government announced a program for choosing industry change leaders who will drive the positive changes in the key industry of economy. So I would say that there is a community of more than 200 people from different sectors who are ready to drive and sustain the positive changes within their own industries. And it's good that government, as a main sponsor of this program, strongly understand and support the creation of this community. What else? Looking ahead, I believe this is going to be a next trend, not only for our region, but actually globally. It should be the integration of change management discipline into university curricula. It's essential, I think, to train specialists in change management already at the bachelor's level. So when after the completion of their degree, we will have already prepared change management agent with required skills that needed to introduce the changes at various level, either in government, in companies, or non-governmental organization. And if I may mention the role of women in society also changing in Central Asia. There is, over the time, women are venturing into industries that were traditionally male-dominated. I think it's one of the changes that significant in our region. Of course, there is numerous supportive programs for women which focused on assisting women to open up their own businesses. However, I would say that there is a fewer programs that help women to advance in their corporate and governmental settings. And this gap is actually, I think, something that needs to be fulfilled in the future.
So what kind of support do you think women need to be able to excel or, you know, succeed in those types of careers?
Of course, there is educational trainings teach how to handle time management and leadership, some leadership skills, develop leadership skills. But I would say that they are fragmented and they do not support the full range of support for women who want to move up in their career ladder within the company. And what I suggest is for sure there should be some mentorship program for such kind of professionals within the company. There should be some individual plan of development for those who would like to grow within the company and the governmental level.
Do you find there's a lot of resistance, either within a company or societally?
Previously, I think it wasn't resistance. It was some kind of lack of knowledge, maybe mentality, previous mentality from Central Asia. Right now, it's still, we are consuming the information. We are trying to find the ways how to help such kind of professionals within the company. But I'm not observing like strong resistance on these matters.
I think sometimes we can tend to see resistance and not want to engage with it. Whereas what we should do is talk to people and find out what support they need and the help they might want in order to be able to build their careers and so on.
I look at the resistance quite a different angle when we had a key speaker in San Diego conference who said that people afraid, they are not afraid of changes, they are afraid of the loss. So resistance create because people expect the loss throughout the change. And you need to work with this understanding that the person expecting to lose something throughout the change. In this case, resistance could overcome more easily.
Yeah, I mean, like loss of power or the things might go wrong. What kind of tips do you have for change managers or people that might be new, people starting out their careers or wanting to learn more about it? Are there things that you would recommend people do or advice that you would have?
May I use this as a platform for advertise our upcoming conference, Global Connect, in June? I think it's a huge resource just to understand how to be introduced to change management, because as I mentioned, all of us been introduced to change management from different type of trainings, from different type of situations in our life. So I think this conference will be quite a useful tool and platform. And it's virtual conference. It's held annually by SEMP. So it's full of very useful sessions where you can find out many tools in change management. And secondly, I think the great resource which I found for myself is when you start learn something about change management discipline, you need to find like-minded community. And such community you can find by joining SEMP Connect, a special platform where there is a lot of networking, I would say, groups where you can ask questions, get answers relating to your experience, to cases, to the transformational project that you're going through. And of course, there is a really great library with a lot of presentations and white papers from the previous events held by SEMP.
When is the Global Connect conference?
So it's the 11th of June to the 13th of June.
Yes.
It's called The Future of Change Is Now. I've quickly looked at it because I've seen this pop up before. I think Doug might have shared it or one of the others. What caught my eye, Pete, was the first three words of the description, of the synopsis of the event, say, from artificial intelligence. Before we even talk about the rest of it, those are the first three words. So I'm in, I'm signed up, I'm going, I'm all over this right now. But yeah, it's a virtual conference, The Future of Change Is Now. So it's talking initially around about the difference in technologies from autonomous cars, wearables, robotics, AI, machine learning. That's pretty much what the first sentence says. So if you know your copywriting, that's the bit they want us to know about first. That's the hook. So yeah, they got me, well and truly. Better go and sort my membership out, see if Doug can throw me a discount code.
Something else I wanted to ask actually is, so in your experience, so you said you sit on four different boards, and I wondered if you could explain a bit at that board level what it is that you're looking for in terms of change management, because I imagine it's slightly less hands-on and that more a more strategic view of what an organization might be doing. So what kind of role do you play in order to help organizations through change?
There is two boards in financial sector in Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan. And there in Kazakhstan, I grew to the board level and had a long career in Kazakhstan company, starting from chief operation officer. And then I joined as board like 2 years ago. And my main competencies is actually working with the business processes, working with executive team, and I'm actually the mentor for current chief operation officer in helping to set up the operations, helping to lead through the transformation project that initiated by executive team. At the board was called KAMKA Network. It's a network of young leaders from Central Asia, Caucasus, Mongolia, and Afghanistan. Actually, this participation at the board give me insight into the regional developments, particular in education and potential business ventures. So my roles there mostly just oversee where we can interconnect within the region between different countries, particularly in Central Asia. And right now I see the rising interest for a cooperation within the educational project mostly. And I think this is a good opportunity to implement change management discipline at the university. As I mentioned, that it's going to be the next trend, and I would like to contribute personally to implementation of this trend using the KAMKA board, Central Asian board.
Adam, when we were talking to Doug and Gilbert on a previous episode, we were talking about the types of reaction to change within an organization in both in America and Australia. We might have done it with Siddharth as well. I can't quite recall off the top of my head. And they were describing a kind of like this, essentially like, I was going to say pot noodle, but you might not know what that is, but like a microwavable effect where there's an investment and they want that change to happen immediately. So you pop it in, and rather than, you know, taking 3 hours to slow cook some stew or some beef, it's a case of pop it in the microwave, put it on for 30 seconds, and it's got to be ready. Is that a similar culture to what you find in the places where you work, or is there a slightly more patience and a slower build up to the change aspects?
Yes, I don't think that there is a huge difference between others' culture. I like to see that right now, in standard, there is a 5 stages of implementing the change. And the first one is that you need to answer the question to those who will be impacted by changes. Why these changes should happen right now? What in these changes for me? I observe that this is coming to be a really culture for us in Central Asia, that before introducing any changes, you should answer this question for everyone within the company before starting any changes, if you would like to gain the support from everyone. So in some way, yes, you need sometimes to implement. You need to make some pre-work, some homework before starting any changes in the company.
Because one thing I've noticed more so, and I don't know whether that's just because it's an evolution of the methodologies or what have you, but when I started out years ago, going back into the noughties, we used to do a lot more on audience analysis, the segmentation of the audiences, and then, you know, maybe using more of a comms type approach, but the no-feel-do. And you would break down your hierarchy of the organization from the top right down to the bottom and across to say, depending on the levels or the personas to which you're working at, you would then look across those questions: what's changing, why is it changing, and when? And then what do you want people to know, feel, and do as a result of those things? And it would kind of start to build you a pretty broad plan as an idea as to how you're going to have to frame it and take into account how people feel. To your point, it's not the fear of changing, it's the fear of loss. And you can start to ping these things out through no feel do. But I don't see that so much in a lot of the projects I've been working on over the last few years. And I suspect that's because this demand of instant change, and perhaps it's the volume of change that organizations are facing, means that we don't have so much time, or we're making assumptions that perhaps we didn't make before that we knew it. I don't know whether you find the same where you are, but I've just noticed it myself over the last few years.
I think I agree with you about volume, and I would like to add on absence of knowledge, because people treat change management, as I said, still as a human development competency, as sum up from the human development competency. So first, they don't have a time to talk with people. And second, they don't have a knowledge how to speak with people. And they don't want to hear and listen what people will give it back, why they don't like to be changed in the way. So I think it's volume first and absence of knowledge. What is change management?
Yeah, I think that's right. The volume of change, that, and I think that is a post-COVID thing as well, isn't it? I don't recall so much change having to happen. And that might be kind of a bit of cause and effect with the move to remote work and hybrid working means that we have to have more technology than we've ever needed before. Those are having both, you know, downstream and upstream effects based on legacy systems that can't engage or interact, or changing the investment profile for what we need in the future. So this perspective of change mapping, where is, you know, the nice to have, the must have, and the legal to have, we're not really looking at those three things as the joined up. We're just getting it done. And then, as you say, we need more people, so we bring in more, you know, project people, more change people, but like you said, they may not have the knowledge and the experience. And if I suppose it's a slight flaw, and I can't remember who said this as well, but centers of excellence mean that we contain knowledge, we don't actually share it, then we're not actually enabling more people to have the knowledge to be able to communicate and engage effectively. I think that's kind of what we're agreeing on, isn't it?
We have a question that we'd like to ask all of our guests to wrap up the episode, and it's very simple, but we like to ask people what their favorite biscuit is.
What is biscuit? No.
A biscuit is...
I haven't got any here. Yeah. I usually have a packet on my desk.
I didn't even know. How do you describe what? They are...
So when you studied, right? In Birmingham, yeah. Didn't you, Aizan? You studied... Yeah. So with a cup of coffee or a cup of tea, we'd often have like a small sweet treat, which is either covered in chocolate or sugar, because that's what we're like. And we call them like... There's like digestives or cookies. And the Dutch have like a waffle, so it's like they've got caramel wrapped around wafer, and the Australians have Tim Tams, I think they're called, but different things. But a bit like, I don't know if you know Kit Kats or stuff like that. We have, that's like a biscuit. Wow. I'm probably going to set someone on a divisive wave somewhere. But do you have a sweet treat that you have with a hot drink in Central Asia?
Yes, of course. We happen to be a very coffee consuming nation, amazingly. But I should disappoint you because I'm not eating sugar. And
oh,
I don't
like
sweets because...
there we go.
Yes. But we're eating a lot of horse meat. So, yeah. Horse meat. Have you ever tried?
Not knowingly.
It's our national food. Yeah. So we're not on sweets, but we are meat eaters. Very strong
meat eaters. Meat eaters, right.
It's the only thing I can think.
There we go. And that's something I just love about these calls.
There was that thing a few years ago in the UK where they'd found that a load of supermarkets were selling horse meat and selling it as beef, right?
Yeah, they did.
They
substituted it, I think, didn't they? I don't know if it was intentional or not, but we ended up with a lot of horse meat in a lot of our meals, and we weren't knowingly eating it. So it was a bit of a news item over here because the supermarkets aren't allowed to just take something out and not tell us. So it did make the news.
The national cuisine called besh parmak, because you're eating by five fingers. Besh, it's a five in Kazakh. So it's called besh parmak, and the main attribute to this food is it's a horse meat.
That is probably quite far from a biscuit that we'd have in the UK, to be fair.
I'm going to have to try it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Opposite, I would say.
Yeah.
And so, pizza vegetarian as well.
Probably even less likely to eat it.
Yeah.
So he's not going to try it, but I'm definitely going to have a go. Yeah, I'm going to have a go. I like the idea of that. Cool. Thank you so much for your time, Izan. It's been super great to chat with you. You've been a super guest. I note things down through our conversations because it's just triggers to me again and again. And I've just shared your YouTube channel with a friend of mine who I know will be super interested. So I wouldn't be surprised if that gets shared further and wider for you, okay?
Thank you. Super. I really had fun because for me, as I said, it's quite a new format of interaction, but I didn't know that it could be some really fun. So really looking forward to see what we've got at the end.
Thank you very much for doing it.